You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Yesterday, I did part one of a two-part show, mainly because I didn't have enough time to really complete yesterday's show. So I'm going to do that, and I don't know how long it's going to take, probably at least 30 to 40 minutes, which I do have that time to do today. Let me set the stage. I'm not going to repeat part one, but for those that are listening, I recommend you listen to part one before you go to part two. Now, I'm going to try to make part two self-contained or independent of it, but to get the full sense of what I'm talking about, because I gave a lot of background information that I really don't have time nor interest in repeating, but you need to have that background information in terms of who are the players here? Who are the problems? And it is the Islamic State is the first one, but the bigger and more important threat to peace in the Middle East is the Islamic Republic of Iran. Now, where I left it off yesterday was I gave you my conclusion that the American people today, and this could change as the situation changes, do not want to send back our military in force to the Middle East, in particular Iraq. They can be used to stop the Islamic State. But what should be done? Given that political fact, because I think what's happening is there are a number of Americans, especially the neocon wing of the Republican Party, that want to go back. Now, they'll hedge it by saying, well, doesn't have to be our troops. It can be other troops in the region, but it's going to have to be Iraqi troops. And they have not so far performed well. Yeah, there have been some instances where they've done well, but the Islamic State has extended its control of the area. Now, I think they're about at their limits. And the reason I say that, Baghdad is a huge city, and the majority in that city are Shia. And that's they constitute about two-thirds of the population, and they oppose the Islamic State, who are Sunnis, but they're really a fanatical wing of Sunnis. They're Salafis, and that's the problem. What you're dealing with here is very much a religious sectarian war, and you got to face that fact. Now, there's one thing when I listen to the people that want to go back, therefore what they call nation building, and it's really not nation building, it's state building. And they're very much government interventionist abroad, but they don't seem to understand why the United States military can defeat anyone on the battlefield. I don't disagree with them there. The problem is not the war, it's the peace. Because when we pulled out, although it was a rocky situation, the United States forces had defeated Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which now is the Islamic State. They killed most of them, and the ones they didn't, they put in prison. And many of them that were not killed or wounded fled to Syria. They had time to regroup and get arms, and because of their rather rapid victories in northern Iraq, remember, northern and the western part of Iraq are where the Sunnis are. The Kurds are in northeastern part of Iraq, and from basically the central down to Basra on the coast is where the Shia are, with Baghdad being very much a mixed city. I don't think the Islamic State, even though it's gotten a lot of the weapons we gave the Iraqis, and you need to understand that, they got literally, in terms of equipment, artillery, tanks, Humvees, MRAPs, mine-resistant assault protection vehicles, which are much better than Humvees. They got a massive armory of weapons, largely because the Iraqi government fled, or not the government. Well, the government fled, but the troops fled. And that's why we're in the situation we are today. Now, I want to keep this in perspective. The bigger threat is Iran, by far. And that's what I'll be talking about most today. Because I think if the United States wanted to, all by itself, they could stop the Islamic State. And it would be heavy bombing, not this periodic. If we went all out and none of this nonsense of getting permission up the chain of command, in other words, the rules of engagement are clear, we're going to win the war, we're going to win this quickly, we're going to bomb them, they'd be dead. Not only through the bombing, but it would take tens of thousands of U.S. troops. And see, that's the problem. The American people are fed up with this. This is an open-ended situation, and the American people say, no, we spent too much money, and we've had too many people be wounded and die in Iraq. And I don't agree with Obama on there's very little I agree with that Obama's been doing, but I think he has one thing absolutely right. It's about time the Iraqi army stand up and fight and win. You see, either they do that and soon, or they will lose the support of the American people. If you have another instance where the Iraqi troops run, not surrender, just cut and run, and it's documented, I think they will lose more and more support of the American people. I'm not saying there's not some support, and there is, to go back to Iraq. But they're not talking very loud. Because I think when congressmen, women, as well as senators go back to their district, go back to their state, they're hearing from their constituents. And yes, their constituents are divided, but the general consensus is we've spent literally trillions of dollars fighting this war and providing them training and equipment over years. Now, the United States government made a lot of mistakes. We're very good at winning the so-called war, I would say winning the battles, but we don't have the ability, really, to win the peace. And why? It's interesting listening to people debate this. Talk to some of the military that were over there and ask them what was one of their biggest problems by far, and I don't think this is arguable at all. Very few of our soldiers could speak the language. Very few. From officers down. After you've won the battles, you have to secure the neighborhoods and the towns, and that's how you win the peace. And if you can't speak the language, you don't really understand the culture or the religion, you have problems. That's a challenge. You see, there's a big difference between fighting an all-out war, a total war, with hardly any rules of engagement, except to kill the enemy, as opposed to when that ends, having to provide security for the people that are there. And remember, one of the biggest mistakes, we dismiss the existing Iraqi army, as well as the police and anyone associated with the Ba'athist Party, not just the top leadership. And because we did that, you had a lot of unemployed people, but more importantly, you had no real forces to police the area, and you had to start from scratch building an army. Almost impossible. And the other thing to keep in mind is what the United States has that the Islamic State doesn't have is an Air Force, whether it's the United States Air Force or the Navy, but neither does the Iraq state. What's key is combat, air combat support, as well as artillery. So the best I can see happening in the Middle East in terms of Iraq and this, the Islamic State, the country's going to be divided. They're going to go back and forth on this for years. There's never going to be a decisive win, unless you have a commander-in-chief backed up by the American people, and that's the key thing. You don't do this without a declaration of war, no matter what form it takes. I prefer a clear-cut declaration of war, and you're going to need the votes to do it. And I'm not, I am serious, I don't think they can get the votes. But my crystal ball is no better than anyone else's. The United States government is broke. We're heading towards $20 trillion in debt and over $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities. And that is something the people that are advocating war have difficulty. They don't want to confront that. The American people are confronting it, and they're saying enough is enough. Now, that doesn't mean we have a weak defense. I'm very much for a very strong defense. But I'm not for government intervention abroad, especially when we've already been there, done that, and it hasn't turned out well. We're going to repeat the mistakes again, and frankly, we're taking sides, and neither side has much to recommend it. Everyone's talking about the Islamic State. No one seems to be talking about the Iraqi state and the Iraqi Shia militias. And that gets back to my point. This is a religious sectarian civil war. And if you know anything about civil wars, they tend to be violent. I won't say they don't take prisoners, but we've seen the Islamic State really doesn't take prisoners. If you become a prisoner of there, you most likely will be executed. And because of that's happening, what do you think the Islamic State is going to do when they win? You don't think they're going to do that? And that means both sides are out for revenge. I personally don't want to see U.S. troops going back, and I really don't want to see much money being spent on it. Now, the one area that I can see makes some sense is supporting the Kurds. And I would support the Kurds by providing directly, not going through the Iraqi state in Baghdad, but directly. Remember, the Kurds are in northeastern Iraq, the mountainous area. They're Sunnis, but they're not Arabs and they're not Persians. The ethnic group is, they're Kurdish. And under Saddam Hussein, he went after the Kurds. You see, that's a people without a country, and I would support them. And I think if you explain to the American people why, I think the American people would support them by doing what? Providing the arms they need. I would even go a little even further, try to recruit the best people and train them in fighter aircraft as well as artillery. You see, that's the one thing that the Islamic State definitely does not have, and that gives a lot of leverage to anyone that has it, like we do. But give them that capability, and it's going to take time, and we are giving some support, but it's a waste of time and money to send the armaments to the Iraqi government in Baghdad, and they never get to the Kurds because there's an animosity between both Shia and Sunni against the Kurds, and the Kurds don't like either of them. That's the extent I think the American people will provide any substantial support in that area. So what we're going to see is a bloodbath. I wouldn't advise travel in that country because either side will kill you. They don't like Americans. They'll take our money and our equipment. And the Islamic State just takes it when the Iraqi army cuts and runs. No one wants to bring that up. And the fact that, you know, we were there in force training a brand new army for years, and then they cut and run. I'm through with that. And I think the majority of Americans are through with that. That's taxpayer money. In other words, the days of a blank check are over. Right now, the extent really of U.S. involvement is pilots dropping bombs and trainers training again the Iraqi army, as well as forward air, what do you call it, observers. And that's something I need to mention. The United States relies on technology, and we have the best technology, military technology around in terms of fighter aircraft. But what do you need? You need intelligence to spot the targets. Without intelligence, you don't know who are the legitimate targets. And what the Islamic State is deliberately doing, you've seen the videos, I've seen the videos where they have a march through the city, and it's a long line of their captured vehicles, tanks, Humvees, trucks with machine guns on the top. They parade through the town, flying the black flag. And what I asked, as well as others, well, why isn't our Air Force? That's a perfect opportunity to take out all that equipment. It's all lined up in a line going through the city. Why aren't we taking it out? Well, the answer, I was going to say it surprised me, but not really. The Islamic State makes sure there's a lot of civilians and other people, in other words, people not involved with the Islamic State, are mixed in. And our government won't take out those vehicles because civilians would die. And I agree. If we attack the column like that, they're going to be in it, so-called innocent civilians, people not non-combatants is a, probably a better technical term, that are going to get killed. But because of that, we're not doing it. Instead, we're picking off onesies and twosies if we catch them on the road. But another problem you need to understand, they're going underground. There was already a network of tunnels in that area that they've expanded. It's very much like Vietnam. They were big in tunneling, just like Hamas is big in tunneling, and then they tunnel right into Israel, pop up, and send terrorists in. The moment the United States would enter that war with tens of thousands of troops, they're going to immediately go, the Islamic State is going to go into an insurgent type of war. They're not going to fight a conventional war with us. And that's something you need to understand. It's a guerrilla war. And if you talk to anyone in counterinsurgency and ask them, well, how long does it take to win a counterinsurgency? Invariably, they'll say a long time. It's a long war. How's long? 10 years plus. And that is the problem. Because you need to answer the question, how many troops for how long, U.S. troops, would have to be in Iraq to win a counterinsurgency war? Tens of thousands. Anywhere from 50 to 100,000, maybe more. And we have a president that simply won't do that. But there's a more basic problem. Even if we get a Republican president in the White House in 2017, would he go forward knowing that? Knowing that the American people are against it? I don't think so. Because this is going to really start a national conversation. And that's the question that has to be asked. How long are we going to be there? How long is it going to take? You see, the big mistake that the Bush administration made, as well as Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld made, they were trying to do this as a quick war, in and out quickly. We won the war part, the battle part, quickly. What we lost was the peace, and we didn't plan for it. And what's the problem with U.S. soldiers policing communities? First of all, it's an entirely different mission. But the biggest problem, they don't understand the language. They can't read it, write it, or understand it. That is a severe handicap if you're acting in the role of policeman. And that's, in essence, what you'd be doing. No one addresses that. I shouldn't say no one. And I forgot to point this out. For those new listeners to the show, the way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is to go to my companion blog for the show, and that is pronkpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll see my picture of yours truly in the studio, and underneath you'll have links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows, and below that you'll have my notes, or some of my notes, preparation, largely in this instance, a lot of videos, and I'm afraid I probably put too many videos. Now, the reason why I'm pointing this out, there's a gentleman, his name is Barnett, and let me see if I, yes, it's Thomas Barnett, and I have a video, it's only 25 minutes, it was one of these TED Talks, Rethinking America's Military Strategy. I think it behooves anyone, especially all those people demanding a strategy, that they listen to this video. Better yet, this gentleman has written several books on it. I'm reading one right now. We need to understand the difference between winning a war and winning the peace. We can win any war, but we're not very good at winning peace. That's the challenge. We're probably the best at it, but that's not very good. And it comes down to, there's a number of reasons, but one, the first one is language. Second, understanding the culture, what you're dealing with. And the fact that our military are not trained to do that. They're trained to do what a military does, and that's kill and destroy the enemy. That's not what a police department does in any city. Not kill the citizens and destroy the property. Maybe our SWAT teams are. And a little small update. I introduced the show last time that when I was coming to the show, I turned the corner going to the parking lot, and lo and behold, the Dallas SWAT team was there, police, I think about six or eight of them, ready to knock the door in. Well, the tenant is still there because I passed by coming home late that evening, and tenant's still there. This morning, they were still there. But the door has a big smash mark in. I think they tried to bust it down, and those doors are hard to bust down. But you see, the military is trained to blow, send grenades in. What I'm trying to say is it's very tempting, and I've heard Americans call talk shows, what we should do is bomb them to the Stone Age. And we have that capability. What's stopping us? If we go on a total war footing, in other words, total war, like in World War II, oh, we would win. I have no doubts about that at all. But tens, if not hundreds of thousands of civilians, non-combatants, would be killed. And that's what it would take, because the Islamic State already is making sure that they're mixed in with civilians deliberately. You see, if you're flying a fighter, you got to have a target. And as long as we have a commander-in-chief with insisting on rules of engagement to minimize so-called collateral damage, and the only people that get killed are members of the Islamic State, you can't act like we did when we fought both Germany and Japan. We firebombed those countries. We nuked them. And that is what has to be done if you want to win a war, where they plea for peace, unconditional surrender. Instead, we're fighting this war like a bunch of lawyers. And that's very, very frustrating. My alternative is, and I gave the background, so listen to the background for part one. The Shia and the Sunnis hate each other and have been killing each other for decades, actually hundreds of years. And it's continuing. Do we want to pick sides? I say absolutely not. Cut our losses. Now, that's not going to go down very well, and I understand this, with people that served in Iraq, lost friends in Iraq, or wounded in Iraq. But we have to draw the line somewhere and tell them you're on your own. You're on your own, with some exceptions for the Kurds. I would arm them to the teeth, train them to the teeth, arm them to the teeth, but tell them it's your battle. You see, that, I think, was the lesson of Vietnam. Don't fight other people's battles. We seem to keep making that mistake. We provide them, Iraq, with the armaments, the training, over years. And the first time they faced a determined enemy, the Islamic State, most, not all, but most ran. And the ones that didn't and put up a battle, if they weren't killed, they were slaughtered, taken out into a field and shot or beheaded. You want to put your son and daughter back into Iraq? I think the answer from the American people is no. I could be wrong, but we have a United States Constitution that makes it very clear if you want to go to war, you declare war. Something we've gotten away from. Now, some will say an authorization to use force is the equivalent. I understand the argument. But the key thing here is you want to get the American people behind this. And if they're not behind it, you don't go back in, period. In other words, the neocons of the Republican Party are going to have to make the case. They can talk amongst themselves all they want. And I think some of the more conscientious know this. Enough is enough with so-called nation building or state building. Didn't work out too well. And what makes you think it's going to work out this time? I think that's a 50-50 proposition. And only if you're willing to commit long-term many troops for a long period of time, 10, 20, 30 years, just like we did in Japan, Germany, and Korea. Now I'm looking at the clock and I did it again, and I really don't want to do a part three. I might have to, though. The bigger threat by far is Iran, because they support terrorists around the region and they want to dominate that region. Now, the Islamic Republic of Iran, they're Persians. They're not Arabs. They're Persian. That's an important difference. The Arabs and the Persians don't like each other. Furthermore, they're Shia. The majority in Iran are Shia. The majority of the Arabs are Sunni. Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Egypt, the countries, Qatar, the Arab Emirates, Bahrain, all feel threatened by Iran. They do not trust this president and feel that we've walked away from stopping them. and they believe that Iran either has or will have shortly a nuclear weapon, and the United States is negotiating with them. I felt all along that was a big mistake. And that is by far the bigger threat, because with nuclear weapons, that does destabilize the entire area. And when they're dealing with terrorists, they could provide a so-called dirty bomb that could be brought into the United States and detonated. By far the greater threat to the security of the Middle East is Iran. We should not be negotiating with them. We should be demanding that they totally dismantle their nuclear weapons program. And if they don't do it by a date certain, and I mean soon, we have no recourse but to take that equipment out. Is this something the president, the current president, commander-in-chief, is willing to do? Absolutely not. He's really taking the side of the Iranians in this negotiation. And the UN, believe it or not, is complaining about it, because there have been violation after violation by the Iranians. That's why I think the bigger threat by far is not the Islamic State. It is the Islamic Republic of Iran. I don't think we're really going to get an agreement. We're about 3 weeks. The end of the month, they're supposedly going to come up with it. I think when, if we ever get in writing, signed by both parties, what it is, I think the outrage of the American people will be manifest. You see, neither party trusts each other. I don't trust the Iranians, and the Iranians don't trust the president in the United States. And when that's the situation, you have no business negotiating anything. The only way this is going to be solved, unfortunately, is taking that out. And what I mean by that, you first make very, very clear the consequences of not dismantling your program. And if they, no delays anymore, because that's what they've been doing with the negotiations. Delay, delay, delay. And I already believe they already have one or more bombs. They're just perfecting their capability to miniaturize that bomb and then put it on a missile. So we'll see what's going to happen at the end of the month. I'm not optimistic, because I think once it's exposed to the American people what the specifics of the deal are, and given some of the statements out of the leadership that we could never go on an army base, excuse me, that's where they're building this. That's a deal breaker in and of itself. And you don't lift the sanctions until we first have established a baseline of what they have. And it's abundantly clear, at least on the top level, the supreme leader, that there's a disconnect between him and what supposedly is being negotiated. When we get the details, and we should probably get them, I don't think they're going to have anything June 30th. I think this will just go on and on and on. But the American people, as well as our representatives, should demand, show us the deal. Because I think we've been lied to by President Obama and Secretary of State Kerry. The Iranians don't trust them. I don't trust them. Because I think when we see the deals, the American people are going to scream and holler about this. Obama wants a legacy, but a bad deal is not a legacy, especially when the American people see the deal and say, no way. With that, I'm going to have to close the show. And I'll pick up, I'm not going to do a part three, but I will do a show on the Iranian nuclear negotiations as we have a news story on it. There have been some diplomatic stories, but I don't want to get into that. I don't have the time. With that, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College.